Welcome back to another Tuesday night with your hosts. You have Star and Lisa tonight. Aaron's taking the night off. Tonight we're discussing vampirism since it is the vampire's holiday. Star, do I have you?
Oh, do you have me?
Oh, you were muted. I unmuted you.
I am muted? Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. So,
here I am.
Gosh, and so we were looking at getting guests or someone on, you know, that practices vampirism, and that would have been, you know, great to hear their take on it. But through the research, it was just insane, the stuff that I found out and read about. How was your experience in researching vampirism?
Same thing. I've always been interested in vampires, even from a little girl. Doing some research on it and finding out that there are actually people that do the bloodletting and the blood sucking even today is just that's amazing to me. But it's kind of creepy. But I've always been into vampires.
Yeah, because I mean, even as a nurse, I can stick other people all day long, but you come near me with a needle and I'm passing out.
Yeah, so, that's the same. I'm the same way.
Like when I was reading it, there was two kind of different definitions. There was vampires and there was revenants. And I don't know if you came across that too. So, and I don't know, you know, obviously we don't have anybody. So if anybody like wants to call in and let us know, correct us if we're wrong on something. But the two definitions, you know, so for vampirism, they say it's someone that underwent initiation into vampirism, whereas revenant is someone who returns from the grave without formal transformation. And so there's a few differences between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that they share the same method of attacking victims, though generally biting like the neck or the heart. You know, and I'm sure some of that is more traumatized, dramatized, or however you want to say it, like in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, now they have where obviously, like you said, they can just go donate blood, get a syringe, make their little slice, their cut there, so they don't have to, you know, be all crazy with it now. And, like, there's different forms of vampirism and so many subcategories. Did you run into that, the subcategories, or how did you, what did you
find?
Well,
actually, I didn't run into that. My research kind of went a little bit different way. I was studying the myths about different vampires and the places that they came from, their names. You know, like in Ireland, I think it's the Derdu, which means the red blood sucker. And then Scotland
mm-hmm.
has a totally different name for it, the Beobian Sith. And that's actually, it's supposed to be like a female vampire that appears to young men. And then it seduces them and eventually drains their blood. Of course, that seduction, you know, always seems to fit in there with the vampire. They like to hunt in the forest at night. And according to lore, they can't go out into the sunlight. So there's a couple of things there that come into the romanticism of the vampire. But
right.
I was kind of looking at some of that stuff too, and I'll share some more of that later on.
Yeah, and I ran into a few myths as well, like sleeping in coffins, and they said that arose from, you know, years ago with the grave diggers and then passerbyers seeing them digging up the graves and the dead, you know, they're not literally rising, but they're coming up out of the grave.
Right.
And so they say, oh, that's how, you know, that came up. And then of course, garlic repelling vampires. And they say that, you know, garlic, you know, is typically hung from windows and rubbed in chimneys and keyholes and then they said, pretty much that's false. You better just carry some pepper spray, they said.
Well, that's getting pretty serious. If you're putting it in the keyhole.
Yeah. Like, wow. When the article says just carry pepper spray, I'm like, all right. And then, of course, the crosses repel vampires and burn their flesh, which was interesting. And the resource said that, which I don't, you know, I don't believe everything, but, and don't agree with everything, but it says that during, or it says that Christians believe vampires are demons and therefore evil enemies of God, and dark angels, dark in the dark ages, vampires were known to have been tortured by the church using superheated iron crosses.
Wow.
So that was another myth out there when it came to vampirism.
Yeah. Well, of course, we've got the way that they kill the vampire, too. A lot of that is myth and legend, you know. We were talking about burning the vampire, like burning them with fire, destroying the heart. And or and if you don't destroy the heart, the vampire would heal itself. So you had to do it just right, or, you know, everything was for naught anyway. cut off the head of the vampire, place it between the legs and, in the grave, and then place heavy rocks on the body. And then you had to have a priest come and exorcise the body. So, I mean, they went to extensive lengths. It was more than just a wooden or a metal stake, which was still part of the myth or the lore of placing this metal stake through the heart. But, you know, there's so much more to it than that. Yeah, they went into depth with that. You know, in my research, speaking about cutting off the head and putting it between the legs and then weighting the body down, I found out that there is a medieval church in Prague where they found 14 of these bodies. The archaeologists did as they were going through, and for whatever reason, the archaeologists were digging up these graves. I think they were looking for graves like this, as a matter of fact, but they have found 14 of those particular graves in that cemetery. And apparently people thought, because the plague that was going through, I believe it was the Black Plague, was going through the countryside there, killing people, and there wasn't any real reason, and they were just wasting away and dying, that vampires were part of the reason that this was going on.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because that's one thing that I read, is they are often used as a scapegoat, was their exact words. Because anytime there's an unknown phenomena, mystery, mysterious death, floods, harvest, failures, things like that, then they were to blame and used as a scapegoat.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm curious if there's anybody out there, just real quick while we're talking, if there's anybody out there that you think you're a vampire or you practice these vampiric ways, you know, give us a call on here tonight. We would love to hear from you, or join us in the chat room on Blog Talk Radio, and just kind of give us, you know, talk to us a little bit and let us get to know you, because honestly, I don't think I've ever really met a vampire before.
Well, and it's hard to know what's truth, what's not truth, because when you read all this, you're like, okay, well, you just don't, like, you know, you don't know how much of this romanticized, like you said.
So
they broke it down into like all these different categories. I mean, they had one they called like Sang, S-A-N-G. It was shortened for sanguine vampirism, most known for the depiction of the violent, like gruesome stories where they're just like drinking the blood from another person. And but they usually do still use a blood donor. And they also drink animal blood, not just human blood. And they have that, they call it a blood hunger. And then there's like other, you know, there's another one that's called psychic vampirism, where they have more psychic tendencies, but they yet still have the vampirism. And then they had a third category that was, it was called psionic vampirism and sexual vampirism. And they feed off the spiritual energy and consume that as their life force.
I've heard about those before, especially about somebody that lives around New Orleans, Louisiana, and down in the the hoodoo and voodoo area. I've heard about those down there. I'm sure they're everywhere, though.
Yeah. And that would be cool to know, too, the statistics, like the breakdown and, like, where if it's more populated in one area, like, is it more Louisiana? Is it more Texas? Is it more southern, more northern? Or is it just diffuse all over?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
like, they had and then, of course, they had, like, new age vampirism versus, like, older age, I guess you could say. I don't know what the proper word would be.
Do the new age vampires, do they twinkle and glitter in the sunlight?
Right. It's just, there was so many different categories. I'm like, good God, where do you even start when you're looking and reading over this stuff? With the Revenants, you know, they said that they either died from shock or eventual blood loss after an attack, but his spirit still appears to his kin and friends as a decomposing corpse. Revenant wanders around at night in search of victims. And then when they attack friends and family, there's usually a vampire epidemic because, of course, the entire village or what have you is eventually transformed into revenants. And then those that remain alive then have to exhume all the bodies and kill them to end the epidemic. So it was kind of interesting to read all that, you know, or the claims anyways. And there was the claims of some of the differences was that vampires choose to transform a victim into a vampire, you know, whereas obviously the revenant just does it. And a vampire's body does not decompose and doesn't, you know, isn't a decomposing corpse. So then those would be like two major differences.
Mm-hmm.
And the two.
Right. Well, getting back to some more ways that that you can kill, supposedly. Now, don't go out and try this, folks. You know, we always have that little disclaimer,
right.
Don't try this at home. But anyway, there's always going out and looking at these ways to kill the vampires. And I think this would be the old version, not the new age, but the old age kind of ways to do this. But but you use silver to slow down an attack, such as a silver cross, knife, stake, or bullets. And then there's the cutting off the head of the vampire with a silver knife to prevent quick healing. I could just see the vampire, the person picking their head up, putting it back on, and it just is right back there again. destroy the body and the head separately with fire. Have a tremendous amount of faith. Place garlic around your neck and all of your windows and doors. There's your keyhole thing, Lisa. Put all the garlic in your keyholes, you know, so they can't even slip through the keyhole.
Yep.
Never invite a vampire into your home. Crucifixes and holy water. Place a rock, stick or vine between the jaws of the corpse. One of those corpses there at Prague had a brick between its teeth, in its jaws. So that right there, that goes with that right there.
Yeah. Yeah, their beliefs, I mean, obviously they believe in reincarnation. And they, I mean, and they say people who are born during a holy period, according to the church calendar, are likely to return as a vampire. And people who, they have these really strange beliefs that you're like, really? Like, there's just no possible way. There's no connection. There cannot be, not be science behind this. But they claim that people who are illegitimate offspring of illegitimate parents are also likely to become vampires. Okay, and then I have to tell you these other characteristics because you're going to chuckle at these. So they say the other characteristics that are common with vampires or would lead you, like, you know, most likely make you a vampire is you're born with teeth. You have an extra nipple.
Oh my goodness!
And it said born with septum cartilage in the noe. So I don't know if that was a typo when they meant nose. and then born with a split in the lower lip and born with bestial features like hair down the back, you know, the excessive hair. So these things are supposedly precursors to being a vampire.
Well, wow. Okay.
Interesting, huh?
Bless their little hearts.
Star, are you good there? No extra nipples?
I'm good. How are you?
Bestial features. I think I'm good.
I think I'm good on the nipples and everything.
As far as I know, I wasn't born with teeth. So, but I wonder if our kids, is that possible? Can you be born with teeth?
You know, I don't think anything is impossible like that. Maybe if the baby was in the oven a little bit too long, possibly.
Well, you would have to be in the oven like a year too long, I would think.
Probably. Okay, I don't know. If you're born with teeth, then I think breastfeeding would be off.
Right. It says teeth don't come out until 3 months of age. So, yeah, I don't know that would be possible, physically possible, but that's what they claim.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be something that, you know, if anybody out there wants to Google that and find out for us, let us know. Can you be born with teeth?
Yeah, is that even possible? No, I can't say an extra nipple is possible, being a nurse. That's what I have seen. Okay, so
yes, I have. There was a lady that I was just chatting with a little bit ago. She was kind of chuckling at what we're talking about, and she said that her aunt was actually born with an extra breast and had to have it surgically removed.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. There's
mm-hmm.
a third nipple on a female.
Yep, I've seen that too. Male and female.
Wow. Yeah.
So there's something called red caul. Did you come across that at all? It's red and then called C-A-U-L.
No,
so
I have not.
It's in many parts of Europe. So a child, is when they're born with, it's called red caul. Basically, it's a membrane that covers the top of the newborn's head, which, they say it's rare. It's like 1 in 80,000 deliveries happen. And the nurse just, you know, pulls it off immediately. But they say that if it has the red caul, the child is predestined to become a vampire. And they say that the caul must be dried, stored, and crumbled into the child's food after a fixed period in order to prevent that child from becoming a vampire.
Gross.
What a coworker said. I was researching it actually at work today earlier, and a coworker was like, "Oh my God, that is so gross." But I cannot imagine. But you know, some people eat placenta, right? I mean, they eat.
Yeah,
I mean,
for the extra protein or whatever. I guess I don't know.
Right.
Or
so
aphrodisiac.
Yeah, I don't know, but supposedly that's another precursor to becoming a vampire. So there you go. If you have extra features, or you were born with teeth, or you were born with a membrane on your head, you may possibly be a vampire.
That's called being born with a veil, right?
You know, it didn't say that. It didn't specify that. It just said born with red caul.
Okay.
Now, that may be similar. I don't know.
I've heard of that before, being born with a veil. I'm wondering if that's what that is. That's something to think about.
Well, now, anything else that you came across that you found interesting?
Well, just a couple of more things in the myths and the legends part. We all know that Dracula or vampires, we always associate Dracula with vampires, but because of the romanticized period in the books, that was written about it. In Romania, of course, you had Prince Vlad Tepes that was between 1431 and 1476. In reality, Prince Vlad is hailed as a hero in Romania. He's not looked upon as the evil creatures that they used to cut the heads off, put between the legs, and weight down and do all these other things with. He was more romanticized by Bram Stoker. He's the one that created the bloodsucker Prince Dracula. So,
right,
you know,
that's what I saw.
Something to look at. There was another author, and I'm trying to remember who it was because I didn't actually take this one down. But there's
Ed Gerard that I came across, and he was another author that includes the diary, because there was apparently some kind of journal or diary before Jonathan Harker, before he escaped from Castle Dracula. And they say that this Ed Gerard is a good author as well and just as comparable to the work of Bram Stoker.
Right. So now, is he the one that wrote the book? It was in the beginning of the 1800s.
You know,
I
didn't
Bram
get the title
Stoker
of it.
Was towards the end of the 1800s.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't get the title of it. I just got the author's name. It was just something I had kind of come across when I was reading about Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, I came across Asian vampires, Chinese vampires, which is the Zhongxi. Yeah. They're considered evil spirits that attack people and drain their life energy, what you were talking about a few minutes ago. The blood-drinking, wraithful deities that appear in the Tibetan Book of the Dead is totally different from the ones that attack and take the life energy, which is the soul. So that's two different kinds of vampires in China or in the Asian.
Right.
It's
interesting between all the different cultures and how much they vary. But then, yet at the same time, they're kind of similar. Well, I thought maybe we could take a little 5-minute break with some Jordan Lee, because he's one of my favorite musicians. And then come back, and maybe if you have more on, I don't know if you have any more on other cultures and vampirism. And then we'll just come back and wrap up the last 30 minutes. But we'll be back,
okay,
guys.
Okay, sounds
so
great.
Sit tight. Okay.
everything is black and white, and every shade's of gray. And every day in this damn town, it feels the same. It ain't just the falling down, it's the getting back up. It's hard these days. You can wait for that sunrise. Everyone knows that there's an end to this night. Open up your bloodshot eyes to get up off the ground. Final one-way street out. Cause it's a lonely night here in this ghost town.
Welcome back, guys. If you're just now joining us, it's Star and I talking about vampirism on Valentine's. And that the song you just heard was called Ghost Town by Jordan Lee and the Revelry out of Austin, Texas, where I'm from. Love to support them. So getting back to vampirism, is there any specific place you want to start, Star?
No, not really. I was just doing a little bit of research on the veil, and it is the same thing that you were talking about, the red coal.
Okay.
Yeah, that is part of it. I had my friend was asking about the veil. How about the veil? Usually, that is associated with being a medium or being a psychic and being able to see through into the other dimensions or the other worlds or whatever.
It's just strange. So I guess the veil means different things to different people, it seems. So for vampires,
yeah,
it means you're going to be a vampire. But for other, you know, other people, like maybe of the paranormal like us, it means, you know, you may have psychic powers or such, you know.
Right, right. And when I was looking that up a little bit, it was talking about also you know, like medicine people or the Native Americans also believe that they have a higher spiritual link than we do. So, yeah, you know, just throwing that out there for just
interesting.
Right before we went to the break, we were talking about the
thing.
Veil.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, yeah, so not necessarily a bad precursor. I mean, it may be for people that believe in vampirism, but for others it may be a good thing. Well, this website that I had come across, I mean, it's interesting because the site is called Vampire Rave. And, you know, you don't realize how many, I mean, when it comes to vampirism, they had everything from mentors to forums to societies, articles, blogs, chat, clothing, clubs, costumes, jewelry, I mean, you name it, games, poetry, music, and even of course fangs. You can't be a vampire without fangs.
Absolutely.
So, obviously. It's just cute. But yeah, so, and then I ran across, you know, gosh, there's just so many different directions to go with it, the topic, you know. But there was so many different definitions I ran across. Like, there was a vampire, I can't read my own writing, and it's terrible, but vampirism, I think it is, if I'm reading my writing correctly. I write terrible. I write like a physician. But it's basically sex with a vampire. Still can't read my writing. Well, fuck. We'll move on to the next one. the next one I can read. Auto vampirism. And that was drinking one's own blood. So I always, you know, assume that they drank animals' blood or someone else's blood, but they obviously drank their own blood as well. Like, what do you think about that, Star? Like, I didn't have any clue. Did you know that or?
No, I didn't. You know, sometimes I might accidentally bite my lip or something, and I'm kind of forced to drink my own blood, but I hope I'm not a vampire.
I'm going to start calling you one now. Be like, she's really a vampire. She drinks her own blood.
Well, you know, you know, I've got these two teeth. It makes me look like a vampire in the front. And my nephew, when we were growing, my canines kind of stick out a little bit. When we were growing up, I used to pretend that I was a vampire just to scare them. You know, I don't know, maybe it's in my roots somewhere.
Aw. That's funny. And then there was, so it was paraphilic that was sex with a vampire. That was the word for that one. And then there was, of course, I came across blood fetishes. So I guess with any, you know, everybody has fetishes. So vampires have fetishes too, but they're blood fetishes, you know. But
yeah,
sex. And then blood donors, you know, I mean, gosh, how many different ways did you find? I mean, because, like, I've seen, like, two where there's societies where they actually – you know, can donate through societies, but then you mentioned that they cut themselves. Do they just typically do it on the wrist, or how do they do that? And I've also heard syringes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I came across was like there's this club and there's several clubs. I looked up, let me just divert here just a little bit. I looked up a site that showed me the different states with the different cities. 70% of the United States, 70% of the states has these clubs in them. And of those states, you know, sometimes it's up to like five or six cities or more that have these vampire clubs and bars that people can go
to. And you've been holding out.
I did not realize it was such a big thing.
I asked you this earlier, Star. I asked you for stats earlier. You've been holding back.
I know, and I totally spaced it. I'm sorry. You'll have to say.
That's really interesting to know. That is like really high numbers, and I would not expect 70%.
Of the United States,
of
the different states. Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
and then to have
totally
a good
surprised.
At least 5 to 6. I mean, 5 to 6 clubs per state, that's quite a bit. I mean, and everybody's as big as Texas.
Right, and there's a few states now that had one city. But a lot of the states, California was huge. Louisiana had, you know, of course, New Orleans and Baton Rouge. But there's the places all over the United States. Now, clubs are different than bars. Clubs,
so what you're telling me is I need to stay out of California and Louisiana.
Well, just don't go to a vampire bar or a club. Anyway, let me get back to what I was saying here.
I'm just messing with you.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Get me all Twitter pated here.
My job.
I know. The clubs you go into, there usually is a manager or a host or hostess that will put you in the appropriate spot. Because I guess, from what I read, if you drink somebody's blood, you want it fueled a little bit with their adrenaline, whether it be through fear or sexual desire. And
okay.
Some people like the fear aspect, so they'll put them over with the fear people. And then some people like the sexual aspect, so they'll put them in rooms with the sexual aspect of it. And the way that they get their blood is they'll either use, I think the number one thing is if you like pain, they will use a razor blade. And they will cut your back, usually up on your shoulder, or they'll cut your arm a little bit, you got to be so careful with this because, I don't want to in and somebody that I don't know cutting on me with something.
Gash across your carotid and bleed out in the middle of the club, you know.
Exactly. Because then you're going to come back as a vampire. Anyway. there's these places. Now, the bar is totally different. You go in, and it's kind of like a fast food for vampires. You go in, you meet somebody, go to a hidden corner, do your little thing, and leave. Mm-hmm. It's more dangerous that way, number one, because of all the bloodborne pathogens that we have now, all the diseases and things that spread and so on.
That's what
and I think
ask.
The club
How
does
these...
a little bit more. I think the club does a little bit more vetting than the bars do.
Now, how are these, because like you mentioned, the bloodborne pathogens, the HIV, hepatitis, all these things, how are they, are these underground clubs? Because obviously they can't be legal if, otherwise they would have all these restrictions and they'd have to go through all this, processing of making sure the blood is clean and good and they're doing it on the spot. So they're obviously not checking people.
Well, the clubs... The reason that they're safer is you have to be a member. You have to pay your dues or your fees, and they do these checks on you because they want to know who's coming in there, and they don't want to be spreading diseases and stuff. So the clubs are actually safer to go to. Now, if you're one that gets off on risk taking, then that's going to be your that's going to be, your bars that you want to go to. And instead of a bar fly, what would you be then? You know?
Yeah. So they have membership, so they've got to be regulated. Or are they regulated or are they underground or...
Well, from what I understand, they're regulated. They're regulated.
Huh. Because I'm wondering if they test their – yeah, and they must have everybody tested, and before they go in or something.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Still a good risk because, how often do they do testing? Say you test, in January and then – you sleep with somebody that or do something or whatever, and they have some STD or HIV or something, and then 3 months later you go to the club and you do your blood, get some blood, drink blood or however they do it, and then it's not your time frame to be retested again, but yet you have it and you've passed it on. It's just such a high risk of contracting things to me, even if you are. At a club that does testing.
Right. But it is even though it's still a high risk, it's still a slimmer risk than going to these bars. But remember I asked you, have you got an answer for me yet? Would it be a bar fly? Or would it be, what would it be called? A bar what? You know, if you hang out in these vampire bars all the time, instead of a bar fly, what would you be?
A bar bat.
Or a
bar
bat, vamp.
I had read, and that's another thing. I don't know where it's written because I've got like a million notes, and you know I'm ADD, as most of you will find out throughout the shows. But there was somewhere where it said, you know, that they believed that bat, bat saliva. There was some special thing about bat saliva. Have you ever read that?
Oh,
the
yeah.
Vampirism.
Well, the bat has the stuff that breaks
something.
Down. It helps break down the coagulant so that your blood does not coagulate. Is that what
but
you're thinking
you would
about?
Want it, well, yes and no. So, like, that would make sense, but then you would want it to coagulate because if you're cutting yourself. I mean, I guess I can see it both ways, okay? Because if it's not coagulating, obviously you're bleeding, and you want to bleed, and you want to collect the blood. But then
right.
you want it to eventually coagulate, so I can see it both ways.
Well, that's
if
where
you cut
you
yourself,
don't want
no
to
matter
hit
what.
The artery. That's where you don't want to hit the arteries or the veins. You know, just the capillaries
and
or whatever that you want to get.
So in what manner would they use it? Would they – the saliva, have you ever researched or looked that up? Like, do they use it when they're doing the blood? I say bloodletting because that's, you know, that's kind of what I was a nurse. But when they're cutting or donating or however they're doing it, whatever manner at the club, is that something that then they go and they apply or use the bat saliva to, how did they, at what point
well,
do they
and
use
I didn't
that
come
and how
across
do they use that?
That? I didn't
okay.
come across that. So, yeah, so that's why I'm kind of out there left field on that because I have no idea about that.
Yeah, it was just something I had run across today in my research and hadn't had time to look further into it. But, I mean, and it's just, you know, it's weird because with the vampirism, there was so many parallels to the paranormal. You know, like I mentioned, the psychic aspect, how they have psychic vampirism. They constantly talk about energy works and manipulation and energy work, auras, empathy, energy constructs, meditation. I mean, it just goes on. And I'm like, wow, you know, I mean, even though it's a completely different culture, I guess they have a lot of the same beliefs as far as those aspects. Which I found quite interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Well, it's just like with zombies, so to speak, and I follow zombies a lot. As you guys know, I read my zombie books every night before I go to bed so I can have good dreams.
oh, poor Kearney. Yeah, I can't watch. I watch Dead Files at night, and let me tell you, he has nightmares. He can't watch them.
Oh.
He's like.
You know, I get that. That's okay. I can't watch some of that stuff either. I can watch zombies and read about zombies, but some of the other stuff I got to leave alone at nighttime. Unless, you know, I have somebody with me. But it's just like with the zombie lore, you can go back through history and find things about zombies, and there are quite different contrasts between them, but then there's these things that are so similar in all of these different cultures all over the world throughout time. So, you know, can there be real zombies? Can there be real vampires? Can there be all these other different things? You know, you start putting these things together and, oh, wow, that was the same here as it was over here halfway around the world at the same time. But yet there's no interaction between those two peoples at that time that we knew of.
I mean, I was just reading, too. I mean, they have, like, shielding. And to me, shielding would be, like, our form of just protection, just putting up your field of protection, your ball, your bubble, uh-huh. whatever you want to call it, in the paranormal.
Right.
I mean, because it talks about, you know, this is often considered a defensive tactic with the purpose to protect the user from harmful outside influences. Many traditions pose a natural shield system inherent to the energy system of most human beings, although some conflate this with aura. And it just goes on, but it, you know, I mean, that just continues on about, you know, all these,
mm-hmm.
you know, same kind of things as the paranormal. But what I thought was
right.
really strange was, you know, how they appear, you know, it said that not if they were a vampire, but if they were a, what was the other term they used? Revenant, how they appear as a, like a decomposing body. Like, why would they choose to reappear as a decomposing body rather than just a normal
body?
I don't
know.
Like,
well, maybe it's the fear aspect that we were talking about a little bit ago. The adrenaline gets pumping and the blood tastes
better. But why would you want your family or your friends to remember you that way, you know, like in the paranormal? I mean, I guess, you know, when we see people and they die and stuff, sometimes you see them in their death state and you see them how they died. So maybe it's kind of similar, you know? I mean,
I don't know.
Sometimes they're stuck in that state, but then do they choose that? I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess that's something that, you know, I sure wish we had an actual vampire that was able to come on and go over what's myth versus truth on the show here.
Yeah, I know. I tried to get, I think I contacted 5 different vampires or people that claim to be vampires in the United States, and nobody ever got back with me. I don't know, maybe it was too early in the day for them. But, you know, I was hoping that we could get somebody on here, but that's okay. There's you and me. And
yeah.
We're doing good.
Oh, yeah. And you have the time zones and stuff, and when you have people over, like, in Europe and stuff. And something
mm-hmm.
interesting that came up with the vampirism, it was categorized other kin. And so it says other kin is a subculture made up of people who describe themselves as being non-human in some way, sometimes believing themselves to be mythologically or legendary creatures. Many other kins believe that they have non-human aspects that are either spiritual or philosophical, I can't talk tonight, in nature. Some other kin claim that they are human in a physical sense, but non-human in a mental or spiritual one. So others believe
mm-hmm.
themselves to be biologically non-human with a direct relation to the species they associate themselves with or descend from that species. And that, you know, kind of all falls under the vampirism. So I guess, I mean, that just falls under yet another subcategory.
Mm-hmm.
Of them.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
Well,
and the myths, did you have any other myths? Because there was, there was one about vampires. Have you ever heard vampires burst into flames upon exposure to sunlight? Have you ever heard
that? Yeah,
that
was That was one of the myths of killing them was to expose them to sunlight so that they would catch on fire and burn up and be kind of destroyed that way.
And they say so they kind of give you like source and fact. You know, in where I had researched it. And so they say under source, it's most likely based on the observation of a vampire's extreme reaction to sunlight and possibly mixed up with their vulnerability to fire. And in fact, they say sunlight renders vampires with their hyper-dilated irises and reflective retina blind. It also causes neutral pathways to fire randomly in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Creating an extreme epileptic reaction or seizure reaction on top of that. So vampire skin is highly sensitive to the UV rays, So obviously they, you know, can burn badly, blister within minutes, basically like us, you know, white pasty peel people like me and you.
Right. Right.
So they say kind of that's where that comes from. And then, you know, of course they mentioned the stake through the heart like you did. And it's interesting how they say the source and how that myth came along. On that one, it says the myth actually started out as a misguided method of keeping suspected vampires in their coffins by driving a long iron stake through the torso and into the coffin floor, effectively pinning it in its place. Eventually, this evolved into simply stabbing the heart, usually with specific types of wood like oak, ash, and hawthorn, which was thought to be poisonous to vampires because of its purity associated with the trees and the nature. So, and then when it comes to the fact aspect of it, they say because their blood clots quickly and is circulated by the skeletal muscles, vampires can easily survive injuries to the heart and torso, and they have little trouble freeing themselves from impalement. Which is strange. They have little trouble freeing themselves from impalement. Now, personally, if I was impaled, I think I would have a lot of trouble removing myself
well,
from impalement.
So.
But that's just me. I don't know. If somebody shoved a stake through my heart, I think I'd have a little difficulty. So I don't know how that's fact, but that's what they say. So I'm just reading.
Well, that's why you have
what
to, according to legend, that's why you have to have silver,
right.
Because
there you go. There's our disclaimer. According to legend, they have no problem removing impalements when they have a stake shoved right through their heart.
Now,
not me, but
silver,
according to
and
legend,
they can't do it.
And they also have no apparent allergy to wood or silver, for that matter. When fighting vampires, your best bet is to aim for the head or spine. Or get the mace, like another article said.
Another disclaimer, folks, do not try this at home.
Right. Put that at the beginning and at the end of the show here.
One of the people in Unger Inc. In our chat here has said that cutters in mental health or self-harm cut as a method to feel something besides void to relieve stress from trauma. You know, could this be the same reasons that someone engages in vampirism? Well, you know, I think that's a very valid question.
Actually, that is a dang good question, because as a nurse, we see cutters. You know, we see patients, usually typically teenagers, kids in high school and such, that do cut, and it's just to relieve stress. They're stressed out. They have, you know, issues going on at home, and I can see it very easily. You know, they want to be involved. They want to be part of a group, and here you have somebody saying, hey, you know, we're a bunch of vampires. Join our society. Uh-huh. Join our group. We cut also. They see them cutting. And, you know, it can easily lead them over to that, to those temptations and to doing that, because they feel part of a group, part of a family, part of a society. I can definitely see, you know, that self-harm initially just being to relieve stress or just what's going on at home leading them over to that. That's a good question. Thanks for that question in chat, for sure.
Well, are you ready for, we've only got just a few more minutes. Are you ready for a couple of scary things in today's world?
Go for it. We only have 4 minutes.
Today's vampire
stories. Whatever you want to wrap up with.
Okay, April of 2016, a man was executed for the brutal murder of a 12-year-old boy in Texas on April the 18th, 1998. And after killing this child, apparently they had gone to he was a young man himself, but they had gone to a party together. And on the way
How old was this kid that he killed?
He was only 12 years old.
He took
but
a
I don't
12-year-old
know how old the young
to
man
a party.
Was. Yeah. Well, it was in Texas, so you know how that is. Anyway.
Hey, now.
Anyway, he and I don't want to downplay the story because this is pretty serious, and there are people that do this claiming vampirism. Anyway, he killed this child after the party. They're walking home. He killed this child. He beats him with an iron bar. And then holds his lifeless body upside down over his face. Hang on just a second. My dog saw something.
We've got some extra co-host there.
Anyway, he beat this child, and then he cut his throat and held his body up over the top of him and let his blood drip into his face. And he readily admitted it to the police officers. You know, they were wondering, why did you do this? And he said, something was just telling me to do it. And I had to do it.
Now, did he claim vampirism?
Yeah, he did. He said that, you know, he had to do it. It was something that he had to do. That was part of it.
See, that sticks to me. Because, like, so I totally understand, you know, do what you want, you know, on your own time, your own club, your own, you know what I mean, being safe and what have you. But to kill an innocent child, that's just sickening that somebody would actually do
that.
But we should, you know, we should change up the show and add a little bit of news at the end of each episode or something. That would be good to do a couple little bits of something going on in the world that's related to the topic we're discussing. I think that's a good idea. Did you have another one? Because we have about 1 minute,
more.
52 seconds.
Yeah. I've got one more. This was actually on Fox News, but I found it on in Vampire Stories of Today. But there was this elderly woman that was lynched in Guyana by a group of villagers who suspected her of being a vampire or an evil spirit. They call it a higu, that drinks baby's blood. And she apparently would sneak into these people's homes. She could shapeshift and do all this stuff, sneak into people's homes, and she would kill their baby, according to them. Well, anyway, they lynched her in this town.
Wow.
And they killed her. This was
almost
in 2007.
Like the Scarlet Letter.
Yeah, this was in 2007. So, I mean, even today, if you get on YouTube, you can and punch in vampires in Texas, you'll come up with some. And I know
you
guys.
Oh, sure. Add my state.
It's all
about Wyoming
state.
There, Star.
It's too cold.
We are down to 30 seconds. Before it wraps and everything and goes to music, I want to just let everybody know to tune in next week. I had the list with me. Star, do you recall who we have next week? What topic off the top of your head?
Yeah, it's going to be on shadow people next week.
Oh, Jason.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
so
I'm looking for the gentleman's name.
Jason. It's Jason.
Yeah, Jason.
I can't recall. I will totally mispronounce his last name, but definitely next week, Jason, shadow people. Make sure you tune in. You don't want to miss it. And Star, I guess I'll talk to you next week. It's been a good show.
Jason,
it's been good talking to you. Offit. There you go. I want to say Offit.
Yeah, it's Offit. And it's going to be a great show next week. So you guys tell everybody to join us, and let's just come and have some fun and discuss this stuff together.
And there's got to be a lot of investigators that have had experience with shadow people that they can bring up, discuss their experiences, what they did, what they didn't do, what should be done, what shouldn't be done. So please definitely be involved in that show. And thank you for everyone that joined us in chat. Sarah, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, bye, everybody.
I love you.
guy.